that happens in life can happen in a show. You can make them laugh, you can make them cry. Anything, anything can go.
Welcome to your weekend. This is Weekend Showcase, your North State Arts Magazine. I'm Tom Kinney. Today we talk with artist David Dragon Boy Sutherland, who has an exhibit of his creations at Chico's 1078 Gallery. His artwork combines paintings, drawings, masks, and found objects to express aspects of his life experience.
I believe that the creative process itself is vitally important in terms of a person having a sense of well-being, of belonging in the world.
Panic in Detroit.
We'll also be visiting the Blue Room Theater in Chico, where the current production is the contemporary comedy drama Detroit. We'll hear from the cast and from the director, Paul Stout.
In a lot of ways, the show is a satire of Americans and their obsession with money and their fears and, you know, how caught up we are. And how the result of that is that we've become less personal, less neighborly. So, I mean, there's serious themes here. But again, for the most part, it's a lighthearted garden comedy, you know, and that's the joy of the show for me, that it has both those elements.
That's coming up over the next half hour here on Weekend Showcase. Stay tuned. First, here's Brian Mall with the North State Arts Calendar.
Tonight in Weaverville, the Trinity Alps Chamber Music Festival features midwinter classics, late works by Ludwig von Beethoven. A discussion about Beethoven and his music will also be included. It all happens at the Trinity Alps Performing Arts Center, starting at 7 o'clock. Opening tomorrow evening at Redding's Riverfront Playhouse, the Tony-winning comedy Vanya and Sonia and Masha and Spike. Curtain goes up at 7:30. Tomorrow at the Cascade Theater in Redding, it's the Annie Sing-Along, the movie musical you know and love with the lyrics on the screen so you can join in and belt out tunes like It's a Hard Knock Life and Tomorrow. The sun will come out tomorrow, at least inside the Cascade, starting at 2 o'clock. Then on Sunday at the Cascade, the San Francisco Opera High Definition Cinema Series presents Susanna. This opera, broadcast on the big screen, starts at 2 o'clock. The Orland Arts Center features New Life for a New Year. Six artists working in oils, watercolor, and various other media capture the timeless beauty of baby animals, puppies, kittens, foals, calves, and more. Center hours, Tuesday through Saturday, 1 to 6. Opening tonight at the Chico Theater Company, the musical comedy Thoroughly Modern Millie. You can enjoy this high-spirited romp set in the roaring 20s tonight or tomorrow, starting at 7:30. Day after tomorrow, at Chico State's Laxon Auditorium, the 50s doo-wop sounds of Under the Street Lamp. This quartet performs classic hits from the Drifters, the Beach Boys, the Beatles, and more. Enjoy the retro sounds of Under the Street Lamp Sunday night, starting at 7:30. At Sierra Nevada's Big Room Tuesday night, spend the evening with blues legend John Hammond. It's your chance to experience this member of the Blues Hall of Fame up close and personal, starting at 7:30. The Chico Arts Center's celebrating the 60th anniversary of its member showcase. This exhibit features a diverse array of art, and there's an artist reception tonight at the center from 5 till 7. That's the calendar for this week. Thanks for listening. According to J.D. Salinger, an artist's only concern is to shoot for some kind of perfection, and on his own terms, not anyone else's.
Let's join Weekend Showcase's visual art expert, Dolores, who's at one of the major art venues in Chico, the 1078 Gallery.
This is Dolores Mitchell, and today I'm at the 1078 Gallery speaking with David Dragon Boy Sutherland, whose exhibition, Mahakala, Guardian of the Temple, runs from January 7th to 28th. With a reception Thursday, January 21st, from 6 to 9 p.m. David, how about the title of your show?
Mahakala, Guardian of the Temple. The Mahakala is a Buddhist figure, an image that one would hang over the temple or the wall of their home to help ward against evil spirits. In my reinterpretation of that entity, I feel that it's not so much evil spirits I'm warding against with the pieces that I'm making, rather it's the spirit of stagnation and overwhelming sense of uncreativity in the home.
I'm looking at a wall that is covered from the bottom to almost the rafters. Although the opposite wall is quite different, has a group of masks that have quite a bit of nice space between each one. So let's go way back to when you were first interested in doing art.
Oh, as soon as I could hold a crayon. I always loved documenting things, and my mom recorded religiously what I had to say about the things that I drew, and noticed that I was very detail-oriented from an early age.
And then I gathered that your parents, who both worked, would drop you off at interesting art studios.
Oh yeah, I did a lot of summer programs with different artists. I took an airbrush course and did a journaling workshop with B.B. Smith. We would go around town and draw different places in Capitola and the Capitola Village and all around that area.
And then you had a mixed career at CSUC, starting in the art department and then switching to graphic design. Why?
I mean, I always loved making art as a child. And then in high school, it kind of got to the point where I didn't know content-wise what I wanted to create. It was just kind of, you know, I was a young cool kid and wasn't interested in doing landscapes anymore and just digressed in terms of content. I didn't know what to create. And so the graphic design program at Chico State, I felt, was a good fit for me because as a graphic designer, as you have a client and they provide you with the content, you just make it pretty.
And then you began to find your own subject matter.
Yeah. As I progressed as a graphic designer at Chico State, I continued to take art classes, as many as I could, and had a lot of teachers that influenced me. One of them, James Kuiper, another, Sherry Simons, through the sort of critique process and just allowing myself to create art with an idea of what I had to say as a human being. I found what it was I longed to say and create and put out there into the world as an artist.
Those things that you wanted to say, can you talk about that?
I believe that the creative process itself is vitally important in terms of a person having a sense of well-being, of belonging in the world. As technology and money basically have begun to drive society itself. People have lost touch with the capacity to create the world around them from the ground up. And I think art becomes more and more important in terms of a person having an individual relationship with the things that they create, as that's not a part of their daily existence.
David, let's consider first the wall that is so jam full of art, sensory overload almost. Did you want to give a sense of that?
The work began on this retrospective wall in 1999. The work itself is very sort of chaotic, very energetic and raw. A lot of it is not necessarily what would be considered aesthetically pleasing from the perspective of needing order and symmetry and representation in a aesthetically pleasing way, I guess. It was an outpouring of myself in a very raw space. Some of it really hit the mark. Other of it is chaos that was tried to be controlled but wasn't maybe successful. It's but all of it is raw and very real in terms of coming from my heart.
Well, you're using quite a combination of found objects and your own imagery. So things from ads and frames of mirrors I'm looking at a door. Where did you get that door?
That door I got from an artist who I admired very much, Steve Miranda Beyer, a local artist. He had this really big art studio on 8th and Main, and he at one point invited me to come make work in his studio. And so we did, we worked together for a bit, and he gave me that door.
Is that yourself, the photograph that looks as if someone's peering through the glass part of the doorway?
Yeah, that was a selfie before the term selfie even existed.
And how did you come up with the other objects that you've painted on the door?
Let's see, looking at the door, there's some stencils, which are a pretty big part of my work. It looks like just drawings collaged on there, drawings on the door. A chunk of a cabinet drawer, a little tin. I just ran at lace, whatever I had at hand, which was quite a bit in the studio.
Well, I walked by the door, and I was rather alarmed because I saw smoke rising.
Oh, yeah, the incense holders are a really big part of a lot of the pieces. They're altars as well as pieces of art.
We've just turned around to look at the wall of masks, all done this past year. And to me, they have a great sense of order. They're symmetrical. They have the sense of almost being like altars. To me, there's kind of a African feeling of being able to add anything, branches, little bits of cooking ware, printed material. I'm looking at an image of the Madonna.
These are the most current works I've been making. They've taken the form. One thing that I did in my drawing, because I've always done drawings my whole career, is I drew these creatures that were, I called them uncategorizable creatures. They were very amorphic, and they sort of were a representation of the undescribable, uncategorizable nature of the human spirit. Well, what happened is that these drawings began to become more and more symmetrical, almost Mayan or tribal, some of the northern masks you see. And those drawings eventually translated, they went from paper into the 3D realm. And I took the assemblage work, which I've always loved to do, and began to almost illustrate the drawings or the masks in a 3D format. And so these are what that has led up to.
Well, can you talk a bit about the creative and making process in one of these works?
Yeah, these works, They start with a foundation. In this instance, the mask with the Virgin that we're looking at, this mask was actually created from a sticker box that I toted around that had my stickers in it for the longest time. It eventually died, so to speak, began to fall apart. And so I added elements to this sticker box to create this mask. There's pieces of a chair that form the ears. To me, this is like a bat. This has bat medicine. You know, I find the eyes, I find the nose, everything gets assembled. Some of it I put together right away because I know it's what the mask wants to be. It's what it needs. Other elements of the mask are put in place and maybe, maybe not. And yeah, it all flows together. It's definitely a organic process that occurs.
Well, I'm really struck by how much more orderly and controlled these works seem to be compared to your earlier work.
Yeah, I guess there's definitely a symbolic aspect to my life as well, needing to find a little more order in the chaos and yet not wanting to divert from that essential inspiration of taking what one normally finds in the world and creating a new context for it, taking something's essence and putting it together with something else to create a new being, which is very untraditional, or, you know, not normally seen in a traditional light.
And this exhibition is going to be at 1078 until the 28th of January. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Dolores.
The 1078 Gallery is on Broadway in Chico between 8th and 9th. And if you visit there next Thursday night, you can not only look at the artwork, but you can meet the artist and talk with him.
And he said,
I'm here at the Blue Room Theater in Chico, and I just saw opening night performance for a new production there. It's called Detroit, and I'm going to be talking with the director and cast. We're going to start out with the director, Paul Stout. Well, I noticed in the program note, even though this play is called Detroit, it's not set in Detroit. So explain the setting of this play.
Well, it could be any suburban town. It's set in 2008 with the financial crisis of 2008 as kind of the backdrop. And it could be any subdivision built in the 60s. Detroit is the worst example of what happened to America during that time. And that's kind of the idea behind it. But it could be anywhere. It could be any suburban area.
There's a lot of anxiety underneath the surface of this play, even though the characters are pretending to be happy middle-class people.
It was rewarding to see the audience get the humor tonight, because there is so much angst underneath it. We weren't sure which was going to read more, the comedy or the angst. But I think both came through pretty well. In a lot of ways, the show is a satire of Americans and their obsession with money and their fears and, you know, how caught up we are, how the result of that is that we've become less personal, less neighborly. So, I mean, there's serious themes here, but again, and for the most part, it's a lighthearted garden comedy, you know, and that's the joy of the show for me, that it has both those elements.
We've been talking with Paul Stout, who's the director of the current production at the Blue Room Theater in Chico. That production goes on through the 30th of this month. And we're talking to the cast of Detroit. Let's start with Amber Miller. tell me the name of the character that you're playing and a little bit about her.
Mary, no last name that's specified. She's a paralegal, drives to the city every day. Her husband's laid off and she's not satisfied with her job. I think they are kind of isolated out in the suburbs, don't have a lot of friends.
She's kind of a wild, exaggerated character, larger than life in many of the things that she says and does.
I think she is that kind of person, and she tries to have a little bit of, you know, a veneer of this proper person. Her spirit and her person is kind of like, ah, but she tries to have that nice gloss, and it doesn't always work out for her.
Okay, we're talking to Amber Miller. Let's move on to another member of the cast. Tell our audience your real name and the name of the part you're playing.
I'm Keith Barrett. I play Frank. He's an older guy who's lived in this neighborhood for a long time, and he's related to one of the characters and comes in at the end. But personally, he's kind of stuck in the past. He remembers the way things were in this neighborhood and is very angry and sad about how everything has changed and nobody's connected anymore.
Keith, what's it like coming in at the end of the play, the very end of the play, where up to this time it's been a four-character play, and then you're this guy that comes in from, as far as the audience is concerned, you're coming in from nowhere, a character we haven't seen before?
I have to kind of start from a dead stop and establish what the character's like and get the exposition out of the way. I don't feel like I've been part of the action, but I am tying some things together and just trying to sympathize with these two people that I come across who've had this terrible thing happen to them.
That was Keith Barrett. He plays Frank, who comes in at the end of the play Detroit at the Blue Room Theater. And now we have another of the actors. Tell us your real name and the name of the part you're playing.
Hi, my name is Rob Kaysen. I play Kenny. Kenny's really trying. He's a good guy at heart, but he makes a lot of mistakes over and over again, and then he's always running away, and then he's making more mistakes.
You and your significant other in the play, it turns out as we watch the play, that you are ex-addicts, so you lived a really hanging on by your fingernails life as addicts, and now you're in this suburban neighborhood. Talk about what it's like to be in the suburban neighborhood after being in the depths of addiction.
Fresh out of rehab, and we are in this house in this suburban neighborhood, and we're just trying to be normal.
But you're not really owners of the house.
Oh, sure, we own the place. Yeah, it's my uncle gave it to us. We are squatting. But that's none of anyone's business. On the outside, it's a little dumpy, but we try and kind of maintain that it's a normal living situation. I think Kenny really, really wants to stay on the down low, and it's really hard with his lady friend who kind of shoots her mouth off, I guess. He's constantly, like, trying to play it straight and be a good guy, but things just keep happening. They always just keep happening.
We've been talking with Rob Kaysen, another of the cast members from Detroit, the play that's at the Blue Room Theater. And now we're going to move to another actor. Tell us your real name and the name of the part you're playing.
My name is Erica Sorensen, and I play Sharon. She is married to Kenny. And they just got out of rehab for addiction. And I can sum Sharon up in a few words. And Sharon just means well. She really means well. She really wants to be accepted in the world. But the world doesn't accept who she really is. So she has to pretend she's somebody else. But her real self always seems to break through. And that self is honest, but it's unacceptable in our society.
Your character has a prickly relationship with a character that's off stage that we don't see, the woman in the pink jogging suit. Talk about what's going on there, because you seem to really have it in for her or resent her.
I think that she represents everything that Sharon's not, and everything that Sharon despises, but she despises it because she'll never be that. And that's what society accepts. So the pink jogging suit lady just represents, you know, Americana, the woman that everyone admires and respects and looks up to. And Sharon has a lot, you know, she has low self-esteem because of where she comes from. And you know, sometimes I wonder too, if maybe the pink jogging suit lady represents her mother or someone in her family. And that's where the beginning of her insecurity and addiction started, because she probably wasn't accepted by her family initially.
Erica Sorensen, another of the cast members from Detroit, which is the play that's at the Blue Room Theater right now. Let's talk to one more cast member. Okay, tell us your real name and the name of the part you're playing.
My real name is Brett Edwards, and the part I'm playing, his name is Ben. We don't have a last name for Ben.
And you are married to the character played by Amber Miller. Talk about the relationship between you and Amber's character.
Mary, yeah. They spend most of their time together, and they present a front that they're the happy couple. They're the happy, well-adjusted couple.
It seems like your character does a lot of brittle laughing. It's not real laughing. It's kind of nervous laughing.
That's a very apt description. That's really, really good, actually. I haven't heard it phrased that way, but yeah, that's exactly what it is. It's brittle.
Why do you think that he breaks into this nervous laughter that he's not even aware of a lot of the time?
Because he's the only one that knows the information that he knows. So every time you see him, up until the point of his confession, he's got something just below the surface that no one is privy to. And he has to keep that. He has to keep that under wraps in every interaction that he has with another human being.
It seems like your character spends a lot of time on the internet, on the computer. Talk about how we spend so much time living this cyber life and we've kind of turned our backs on real life.
It's an interesting cultural phenomenon, and it's one that I didn't really think about so much when we were working on this. I was thinking a lot about economics, and I was thinking about social interaction and personality and identity, but I wasn't thinking a lot about that. But it's a good point that you bring up, and it's a good mechanism for this story, because the internet is a place where you can go and it can psych you out and make you feel like you're having a social life and you're having depth and richness in your human experience. And like Ben says at one point, you know, sort of offhandedly, sometimes I look up from my computer and 3 hours have gone by, and that's the internet. And it's for Ben, it's a place to go. He thinks that it's offering him what he would get from human connection, but he's not aware that he's not actually getting that. It's sort of a trick of the mind. You spend enough time on there and your brain is activated in such a way that you start to feel that you're having real human connection, but of course it's not. It's just a screen.
We've been talking with Brett Edwards. He's another one of the cast from Detroit, the play at the Blue Room Theater. And thanks to all of you.
Was panic in Detroit.
And that's Weekend Showcase for this week. We'll be back next Friday at 3 o'clock. As always, we encourage you to enjoy the arts in your community. For Weekend Showcase, I'm Tom Kinney. Weekend Showcase is a production of North State Public Radio.